Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this July the 30th on the West Coast, now July the 31st on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome all those listening also on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and on BlogTalkRadio.com. Lots to talk about tonight. I think before we go into anything, I have something that I want to read, but first I'm going to bring on tonight's guest so he can share in this little piece and comment immediately. He is a regular guest here on Evident Footprints every Friday night, with a couple of exceptions, but he's my regularly scheduled guest because he is our resident science advisor. He is a scientist, an inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and my co-host on Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don. Thank you. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well. It's been a long week, very busy week. Certain portions of it just seem to blaze before our eyes in a streak of lightning. But other than that, very productive week of research and very interesting interviews, both on this show and on a few other shows. Seems to me this week I've done something like six extra hours of radio outside my own broadcast. And that basically almost doubles the output for the week. So it's been busy. Before we get started, I wanted to give out a shout-out to a group of people that listen to this show and are instrumental in getting many, many others to listen to the show. And they're known as Karen, Bob, and Bill, David, Sheila, Zachariah. Then we have my good friend Jill and the General, and want to wish all of you hello. There are more names every time I speak with these folks, and I'd like to just acknowledge the whole group and those folks working on Project Alliance. I want to share a little story with everyone here. A man died and went to heaven. As he stood in front of St. Peter at the pearly gates, he saw a huge wall of clocks behind him. He asked, "What are all those clocks?" St. Peter answered, "Those are lie clocks. Everyone on earth has a lie clock. Every time you lie, the hands on your clock will move." "Oh," said the man, "whose clock is that?" "That's Billy Graham's. The hands have never moved, indicating that he never told a lie." "Incredible," said the man. "And whose clock is that one?" St. Peter responded, "That is Abraham Lincoln's clock. The hands have never moved, or the hands have moved twice, telling us that Abe told only two lies in his entire life." "Where's Barack Obama's clock?" asked the man. "Obama's clock is in Jesus' office. He's using it as a ceiling fan." Now, it sort of explains what's going on here, whether you want to talk about the economy, the Gulf of Mexico, the issue of global warming, what's going on with the stock market, the banks, the bailout. It doesn't really matter. We're being lied to all along. And I thought this was a very appropriate little story anyway. So if you've never seen a ceiling fan, you won't get that. But anyway, Jim, knowing what you know about science and struggling with the struggles, many struggles that you've had throughout your career, you must totally be disgusted with the course that things are taking, especially in the area of your expertise, power production. You want to comment at all on what you've noticed over the last week?
Well, before I comment about anything, I'd like to say that that was actually a pretty funny joke.
okay.
True, but funny.
Mm-hmm.
I can just imagine the frequency at which that fan is spinning.
That's, yeah.
It's more like a vortex generator.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the thing that upsets me the most, and I mean, this is not just because it's indicative of my own frustrations, but you know how much I idolize Tesla.
Yes.
He was affected by all this, and actually others before him. I mean, look at John Keely. John Keely was actually quite a bit senior to Tesla. His expertise was in the field of acoustics and music. And he managed to find a way of creating a power source out of sound. And even though he put on copious demonstrations of all sorts, they labeled him as a fraud and drove him to the point where he finally put a bullet in his brain. I mean, anybody who has had the calling, if you want to use that term, to do something worthwhile for mankind, is always treated this way. And the irony of it is, though, that once they've killed you or stolen your idea or whatever, after a short period of time, miraculously, they come out with it. And then it's okay. Once the establishment has it in their bag of tricks, somehow it's acceptable. But for the freelance inventor or the rogue scientist, you're just not allowed to have any successes. It's it would be too detrimental to the image that they're trying to portray of all progress coming from well-organized universities, you know, huge corporations with research budgets, and of course from the military research quadrant as well. But the truth of the matter is that some of the most startling and worthwhile innovations don't come from any of those quarters. They come from individuals who have received various types of inspiration and have labored independently for years to bring about their dream. And that's a very sad but true situation.
Were you wanting me to comment on that now or bring up another question?
You can comment on it. You know, we can play ping pong with it. Go ahead.
Well, you're making a point that we've made on so many different shows. And for any new listeners out there, last week we did a show. Basically, you did a marvelous job of pointing out the error in this comment of free energy, and we've attempted in past shows to work our way into that topic and really discuss what that's about. And of course, we talk about the frustrations that all the different scientists have undergone, those who have since left us and those who are still here trying to get their inventions out. One gets the impression that the patent office is just another way to infiltrate technology. They're not concerned about your right to own an invention. They want to usurp it. They want to steal it. They want to use it for militaristic purposes and propaganda purposes and to assault humanity in a sense. both physically and mentally and any other, psychologically, any other way they can dream up a way to weaponize something. It wouldn't matter. It could be something as simple as a new sort of toilet paper dispenser, and they'll try to find a way to make it a weapon.
Or even a ceiling fan.
Or a ceiling fan. That's true. So we've attempted to tackle this topic, and it is a very complex topic, but it really ties in also to what is going on today. Pretty much on every level, we know that they've been lying to us about what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. The only thing that we can ascertain is that there's a lot of wildlife that's being killed, and the water in the ocean is being destroyed. It's been turned into a chemical cocktail of sorts, and we hear stories for a couple of days that people are dropping like flies, and we hear nothing. They've been caught in lies about where these pictures are being taken, where the videos are being taken. They've lied about everything. Why is it that the world doesn't wake up and see that these people are incompetent nincompoops? They may have a lot of money, but they certainly are losing a grip on their reality, because, as we said on past shows, the universe is changing. And it's changing much more rapidly than they ever could have imagined. And because it is, people are waking up. People are seeing the lies. People are tired of the games and the extortion and the blackmail and the murder and the intentional poisoning of the whole planet. People are tired of it. Not enough in numbers, but I think a sufficient amount to change this reality. It's just beyond me why people don't see what's happening. They don't see it. And nothing that they're saying makes any sense. Oh, it's on TV. There's the news. Okay, they got the leak stopped. Then they come out an hour later and say, but there's oil all over the place. Then the next day, the water's clear. You know, I mean, which lie are you going to believe from day to day? And really, we shouldn't listen to anything they have to say. Anything. Because it's nothing but a pack of lies. And these are the people that are suppressing technology and progress in mankind on this planet. And they have designs to wreak this kind of havoc in other places, other planets too. So this isn't intended to be a rant. I'm just commenting on what we have going on in current events today mirrors the things that were going on 100 years ago or 150 years ago. And all these brilliant scientists that whose work you share on the show, Jim, are still suffering from these lies. So I just wanted to make that point. Where would you prefer to pick up this discussion in light of what we talked about last week?
Well, I mean, I think one of the most crucial things to reiterate is this idea of free energy, because it's such an annoying term to me.
Yes.
But on the other hand, I also realize that it has become a colloquialism, and many of the people who accept it have their own understanding of what it's supposed to be. And as a result of that, The term is persistent, or persisting, for that matter. And so, rather than try to, you know, to stop it, the thing to do, I guess, is to just keep throwing out the idea of, you know, what they really are looking for, and where it's hiding. And I mean, actually, it's hiding out in the open. That's the most amazing thing. I mean, first of all, the problem with this term free energy is that all energy is free from a certain point of view. And on the other hand, no energy is free from the opposite point of view, because you have to do work to access it, which in itself is kind of strange because it goes against your intuitive notion about that subject.
Mm-hmm.
But to get back on track, the reason that I don't like the term free energy is because that's not really what people want. They just get stuck with that word or with that phrase. And because they don't understand what's really going on, they just use that to emote a particular desire. But after years and years and years of talking to people about this particular subject, I'm convinced that what they really are talking about, or wish they were talking about, is actually an advantage in work. So if we have, for instance, a belief system or a scientific system, call it whatever you want, an existing paradigm, it says that for so many joules of energy, you are going to be able to access so much usable work, plus some losses, then that becomes the standard by which everything is judged. And the irony of it is that if you come up with a system where you get more work than you can account for in terms of the available energy, then that's considered some type of heresy in the scientific world. Well, the irony of it is that when they tell you this, they are actually invoking for their defense the laws of conservation of energy. But the which of course states that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but only changed from one form to another. And we went through some of this last week.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that you notice the word work is not in there. And what I've discovered after 42 years of working with this stuff is that there are actually systems in which the energy is perfectly conserved, but you get more work out of it just the same. And of course, the irony of it is that they still try to throw that into the same basket as perpetual motion and all these other things. But the fact of the matter is, if you can demonstrate that work is conserved, I mean, the power of energy is conserved, and you still can demonstrate that there's excess work to be had, it brings up some interesting questions about, what the true limitations of our various power-producing systems really are. And this idea of a work advantage is very crucial to understand. And frankly, it can be tracked back to anybody that's ever done any work in this field that had some kind of success. Tesla was an absolute master at identifying various completely natural phenomena that are related to this very concept of having an advantage in work. And there are different ways in which to secure that type of thing in nature as well as in man-made machinery.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, without getting into a really, perplexing discussion about all this, the point is that there's plenty of room for a new paradigm to take root. First of all, it's needed. Second of all this rubbish about how it's going to displace existing technologies and how the economy is going to collapse and everybody will lose their jobs. Well, guess what? We don't have any over-unity systems out there right now, and the economy is already collapsing. So, I mean, it's a lot of bunk. The reason the economy is collapsing has nothing whatsoever to do with this subject, and we know exactly why it's happening.
Yes.
The irony of it is that if we were to engender and promote some of these new technologies, you would have a fix for the economic situation because the whole world wants it.
Well, the whole world minus the cabal that's been controlling the petroleum industry. Primarily, that's the main one that they've leaned on. There were other sources, but then again, they have much more advanced technology that they've been hiding from the public since World War II, without a doubt.
Geez.
You know, and they never mention work when they are talking about energy, do they? It's always this ethereal thing, and it can only be identified as something other than what they're using today. But they never allude to what that is. And again, that leaves the door open for multi-level corruption again. In fact, that's what's behind the Gulf of Mexico. This is supposed to precipitate a way for these companies that have invested heavily in wind power production and batteries and solar panels, which how long have solar panels been out there, Jim? 30 years at least?
Oh, and much longer than that. But yeah. let's give it 30 years for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying 30 years in terms of people having it on their house or on their property someplace. And yet this has been stalled like every other invention that was out there. And I'm not saying it's the greatest invention because actually I understand that it's quite a bit less efficient than other modalities of power generation. So, again, you know, we have these lies being told to us all the time. And we really should be addressing this issue as if they're not even there, as if they have nothing to say about it. Because when they do say something about it, they lie. Why do we allow ourselves to remain in such a state? Why do we accept that? Of course, we've talked about that.
I don't know the exact answer, but I'd be willing to take a stab at it. You know, the problem is that when you get into any kind of a neurotic situation, which you become totally familiar with and accustomed to, even if it's detrimental to you, any departure from that feels uncomfortable. And so if you stop and think about it, you know, since everything that we experience from childhood to the grave is contrived, and it's contrived to put you in a certain mode of thought, a certain series of actions, and even a certain life expectancy is all worked into this stuff. So if something comes along that seems to indicate an alternative path, the strange thing about human nature is you don't see people stampeding down that new pathway to get out of the discomfort zone that they're in. No, not at all. What happens is that they embrace what they know and they just ride it out. Only a very, very few people have the intestinal fortitude to brave a new world, so to speak, and leave all this garbage behind. And so the majority of the masses, you know, prefer the herd instinct, and they just stay on target.
And I mean,
I don't know any other explanation for it. The interesting thing is, you know, you talk to people about these subjects, you get several different reactions, all of which are interesting. Some people will just come out and say, oh, no, nobody really behaves that way. Some people will act as if you didn't even say, you know, any of these things. And they'll just get fidgety and change the subject. And then, of course, there's a much smaller minority that agree with you and say, oh, yeah, you know, I would get off the merry-go-round in a minute if I knew what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think, Jim, in a sense, and, you know, you could see this during this last presidential election, which was a farce. It was a dog and pony show. It was what occurred behind the scenes was in no way a representation of what people were being told and being shown through the mainstream media. That said, one could determine that the majority of the public is apathetic and lazy. And although everybody professes to want change, and they certainly paid enough people to stand around holding up signs that said change and change you can believe in, you're talking about a dichotomy in the way people exist. In other words, they want change, but nobody's willing to make the change on their own. They want someone else to do the changing for them so they can just shift into this other reality, whatever it is. And really, it's the same thing. What you call
it. Actually, it's worse.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, but it goes downhill, of course. It moves down to a lower frequency. They want change. Yeah, things are changing. They've changed for the worse, like you just said. So I think this non-responsive apathy and laziness that's so pervasive because of all the technologies and the conveniences of things, people don't know how to do the simplest of things to survive. And, of course, they know that. Those that are pulling the strings know that they've created people that are basically zombies walking around or sitting around on the couch with their bag of chips and a six-pack of beer and a few Slim Jims or something along that line.
Don't forget the football game or the basketball game that they're watching. That's critically important.
Yeah, yeah, or Dancing with the Stars, or American Idol, all, and it's all mindlessness. It's not even representative of art, what they put on TV for entertainment. It's not the true art forms. They've degraded everything. So that's a whole new topic for another show, but these are the basic fundamental, what's the word I want to use? Well, we can say these are the idiosyncrasies that really reflect the way people are acting. They say one thing, but what they do is the opposite. And isn't that just like what the government does? They say one thing and they do the opposite. So is it any wonder why people don't react in a more conscious or in a more positive way? And to lie about what is going on in the world does nothing but serve their own interests. How much money is enough for those people? You know, how much power is enough? Even I'll tell you this, they're so sick that absolute power is still not going to be enough for them. They'll cannibalize each other before quitting.
Well, they're doing that now.
Yeah, you're right. So, you know, that's the general reason why they just keep playing this game. And, you know, I'm sure you would say that mainstream science is just as guilty. They're acting like the rest of the populace. As brilliant as some of those people are, when it comes down to the simplest things, you can't get people to really look at what's going on and address it within their, you know, their degrees and their certificates and their alleged tenure in schools and their outrageous salaries and their conniving with organized crime. You know, it's sickening. It really is. You know, the whole system needs to be dumped and flushed down the toilet. Sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, the irony of it is it's so bad that even if somebody gave you complete license to fix everything. I wouldn't even know where the heck to start, because everything dovetails with everything else, and it's all corrupt. It's all lies. It's all destroyed. You know, and I've seen this downhill spiral, you know, just in my lifetime, and I know that it's been going on even longer than that. But, I mean, I've been on Earth long enough to see it, to actually remember what it used to be like versus what it's like now. And I'll tell you, the rate of descent is increasing. It's not decreasing, and it certainly isn't leveling off to nothing. It's increasing.
Yeah, so, now that is if you focus on that reality that's been so predominant, let's say, over the past 13,000 years or so. Now, there are also changes taking place on another level. And I'd like to talk about that the rest of the show, to tell you the truth. It's more uplifting, it's positive, and it can be solution-oriented.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we've already talked about the negative side of the thing. We might as well flip the coin over and talk about the positive stuff.
Okay. Now, let me open up a topic, at least from the perspective of what goes on in metaphysics, because we know that there are people who can, let's say, produce work on an etheric level using crystals and stones and magnets and pretty much anything, I think, if you're tuned into that that substance and you allow energy to flow through it, which gets transmuted, going passing through a person, let's say, that's holding on to the crystal or holding on to the magnet or performing some act with it. And I don't necessarily mean a magic spell or something like that. That's not what I'm talking about at all. But a scientific use in a holistic way of something that holds energy. We use crystals already, as you well know, and many in the listening audience know. They use it in watches and radios and computers and television sets, and all kinds of digital devices depend on them. What gives crystals their ability, Jim?
Well, I mean, I think that depends at least in part upon what kind of a crystal it is and what the application is. But essentially, you're entering into the realm of solid-state physics, because take quartz, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, quartz has a lot of interesting characteristics to it, which are inherent in the crystals that nature forms. Like, for instance, there are certain areas where you've got so-called piezoelectric effects, you know, which is the production of an electric charge or voltage, which is directly dependent upon pressures brought to bear against crystal structures in the earth. That's a totally natural phenomenon. And, you know, it's the result of distorting crystal lattices with an outside force, and then when they are allowed to return to their normal situation, that energy that was stored in there by the external force operating to distort the body is allowed to spring back, and in doing so, releases energy in a different form. The other thing that we use a lot of this stuff for is to develop precise times or frequencies. Like, for instance, you mentioned clocks or wristwatches or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or radios. I mean, I remember when I used to be a ham operator years and years ago, they came out with various crystal-controlled frequency generators that were used in association with the modulation of carriers, and that was all done by having, you know, very precise crystals which are operating as part of the oscillating circuit in the gizmo that you're working with. And some of them, at least on the earlier ones that I remember, some of them had crystals that were so precise that not only were they tuned meticulously to a given frequency, but to prevent any drift, they actually had little ovens inside the radio equipment, and the crystals were housed within these ovens, and the frequency is somewhat dependent upon temperature. So by keeping the temperature absolutely perfect, using a thermometer or some type of thermometer that detects the ambient temperature and compares it to the internal temperature in the oven versus the frequency that's being produced, they can keep that thing, you know, to the point where it's unbelievably steady at a particular frequency. And to take this whole thing to another level of consciousness, I mean, a lot of work has been done on looking upon the Great Pyramid, for instance, as a crystal by design, and give consideration to what that would imply in terms of a power source or some type of an energy transducer that was deliberately designed and constructed by the ancients. But you don't even have to go into an exotic thing like that to see some miraculous stuff. The whole key with a lot of this crystalline technology and solid-state physics in general depends on the ability of something to be a semiconductor, which means that it'll conduct under certain conditions, and you can vary a parameter, which we would normally call a control parameter, and it changes the conductivity of something. So now you have a situation where you can introduce gain. Well, the interesting thing is, of course, amplifiers and lots of other equipment all rely on this concept of gain. And anybody that's messed with electronics in any way, shape, or form is probably familiar with that term. But one area where all of this is happening quite naturally is in bone tissue, which is, you know, making use of calcium in the structure of the skeleton of the body, and it's behaving as a semiconductor, which is actually responding to the external input of stress. So, like, for instance, let's say that you're a 25-year-old guy and you haven't done anything special with your life except maybe played some sports or something like that, and all of a sudden you get a job as a laborer and you start carrying bags of cement. You know, you're unloading a freight car or something and putting bags of cement on a truck or bringing it into a construction site or whatever. Well, the interesting thing is, the minute this new level of stress is imposed on the skeletal structure, the changes due to the compression forces that are being exerted by the loads you're carrying actually affects the crystal orientation of the calcium in your own skeleton, and the result is that there are currents flowing in through there, which are responsible for the migration of ions, calcium ions. And so what actually happens is the bone, because of this mechanism, realizes what you're doing, and it will literally shift the design of the leg skeleton and the lower back and the arms and everything else that you are using to accommodate this new loading feature. And, you know, we take all this for granted. We just, you know, nobody realizes the ungodly complexity associated with doing the simplest things. And yet, when you understand this kind of stuff and you have the wherewithal to translate some of this information from a natural phenomenon into an assisting technology of some sort, the results can be miraculous. But here's the rub. The rub is that if you're not in a position to support activities of that sort by yourself, then you're forced to look for research capital. And the minute that you do that, A, you alert the system to what you're trying to do, and B, they, depending on what they want, they will either see that you get assistance, see that assistance is denied to you, or if you're too far along and you're too much of a threat, you'll just have this unexpected car accident, or, you know, your elevator will drop 30 floors with you in it, or a safe will fall on your head from 10 stories up, you know, these various things that happen to people of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we're back to this notion that, you know, total control of everything is the primary issue. And they achieve all of this by controlling the money supply. And by the way, that's in itself an interesting thing, because if you go back and read the history of the Rothschild family, I forget which Rothschild it was start of the whole thing, but he said that, give me control of a nation's money supply, and I care not what laws they pass.
Mm-hmm. That would have been Meyer Amsel Rothschild, whose name was Bauer, by the way, before they changed the name. So, Rothschild in German is the Red Shield.
Mm-hmm.
Says a little bit about where their thinking was. Watch out for the Reds, they told us, right? Well, the reason I brought up crystal, and I know that they're using all kinds of configurations of crystal. There was a discovery, they say, back in the summer of 1996, some college students stumbled upon a device that was of alien origin, or at least they suspected it was of alien origin. And I think the story has been downplayed and changed to be or altered to something a bit more plausible, that these were people from the future who came into our past and left some technologies for us to find. And, of course, this secretive group that's part of the NSA called the ACIO, which is the Advanced Contact Intelligence Organization, I think they call it. Basically, they've been looking for a series of I guess you could call them archaeological sites where they know that these technologies have been left. Now, some of them are crystals. Now, I don't remember when they brought out the Christopher Reeve version of Superman, but you remember the scene, if you saw that movie, where he goes up to the North Pole and he's using crystals, and he's dropping crystals in these different tubes. And there's a holographic projection that appears in this area, which is sort of like a microcosm of a glacier. And he's comfortably standing there in freezing cold weather, and he's working these crystals. Now, crystals have the ability to store data as well. And so they found a couple of crystals in that find, and these are larger ones. We're not talking about the tiny little crystals that they use in various electronic applications, like you pointed out. These are devices that can perform different functions, store massive amounts of information that is retrievable. And so there are probably millions of ways that you can use crystals to perform different functions. When an intuitive or a healer uses a crystal in his or her work, basically they're allowing those universal energies, the natural energies, to flow through there, and the energy is intelligent enough to know what to do. The person basically just acts as a component in a circuit, basically, to allow the energy to flow through them and manifest in a different frequency. But with an intent. In other words, this is intelligent information. And science will say, oh no, this is not real, but, you know, I can demonstrate that the crystals can do quite a few things. I can do things without crystals too, but the point I'm making is that they have the capacity in nature to perform a variety of different functions. And it seems to me that there would be a way, let's say, to produce power to run one's home from a crystal, from one single crystal. There should be enough information in a crystal, or we should be able to put it into the crystal in the correct mode that we can retrieve it at a later time, or that it can basically just self-replicate that energy. You have any thoughts on that?
Oh, I have lots of thoughts on that, and a good deal of experience with it as well. But one thing I should point out before I even get into that, which certainly is in line with what you've been saying, one of the most amazing crystals, which most people don't even realize is a crystal, is water. And the interesting thing about water, of course, is that it's a very malleable form of crystal structure. But the interesting thing is it's responsive to intent like nothing else. And of course, most living things and most food that we eat and things of that nature have a great deal of water in them. And there's a whole series of people in Japan, for instance, which are working with this and actually implanting by intent into water various modes of emotion, various programs is a good word, producing healing or for increasing spirituality and stuff like this. And interestingly enough, and I will say this simply because when I learned it, it made so much sense to me on an intuitive level that I accepted it. But then later on, I actually saw proof of it in some of these Japanese films, that when you pray over food and you ask the universe to, you know, make sure that there is sustenance in that food, nutrition and whatnot, for the bodies that are about to partake of it, it actually affects the water that's in the food you're eating and embeds in there a message or a program or an intention, call it what you will, which has a real effect upon you when you eat it. And so this idea of saying grace before meals is not so far out. But instead of just mumbling a traditional prayer, it would make a lot more sense, you know, to envision what it is that you expect from the food you know, whether it be health or, you know, a pickup or extra energy or whatever. And that will really make a noticeable effect on what you're doing. Now, getting back to what you just said, the thing that's really interesting about all this is that it can now be demonstrated very rigorously that there's an inverse relationship between energy and information. And so the interesting thing is that sequence, as it's found in nature, has been given the overall terminology of entropy. You know, with the there's a relationship between time, information, and energy, and as energy dissipates with the passage of time, also whatever information is associated with the process is affected. The interesting thing is it works in reverse, and that is that you can, with the right type of a system which is designed to take advantage of that relationship, the proper information being introduced, perhaps dynamically or statically, because I've done it both ways, into a system will actually affect the way the energy is structured. And this is the reason why you can have these gains that we were talking about earlier in the show and on previous shows. And so, you know, that's a whole area of enormous potential, which needs to be looked into by the scientific community or by those rogues who might have an interest in experimenting on their own. Have you heard of that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, I haven't heard of it in the sense I'm talking about it. I'm saying, for instance, if and maybe I could give a simpler example, and it would make more sense. Let's say you could, there's a way to transmute energy in a crystal that's based on information. Okay, if you can convert energy with the intent to produce power and to perform work into that information in the crystal and store it, all you would need is something to read that information and then take that information and react to what the information causes it to do. That would be, I think, an entirely different electronic circuit because it would have its own consciousness. Or it would have a consciousness.
That's exactly what I was saying. It works both ways. Yeah. In other words, just to give you an example, right now, you can store energy in certain types of crystals which will manifest as a change in that crystal structure. When you put a laser beam through it, okay, you will encode that, and then later to read it back, you scan it with a laser again. And what happens is it creates a hologram, you know, which is essentially making use of that type of thing. Well, the interesting thing is the input to that in the laser is information going in.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the three-dimensional object that appears when you reverse the process, what I'm talking about is that you can literally do that by taking an information stream and allowing it to affect power production, which is what you're talking about, I believe. And,
that's what I mean.
That can be done through a crystal transducer. I mean, when you stop and think of it, that's what a transistor is doing. The only thing that's different about it is that it's not using pure information as its input, but it certainly isn't using, emotional or spiritual intent.
No, it's using same, electricity.
Same maybe. Principle.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, whatever you said.
I was saying, well, the transistor would more likely be using electricity.
Yeah. But what I was trying to say was that, you know, well, look at it this way. They now have circuits in which electricity is on one side of the barrier and a light beam is on the other side of the barrier, and encoded in the light beam is information which is going to basically instruct how the electricity performs on the other side. And mm-hmm. this is pretty common now. I mean, you've got these things called opto-isolators, which are essentially optically isolated transistors that are using a light beam in the gating circuit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the interesting thing is that you can do something similar with higher octaves of informational expression.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to think outside the box, and to me it seems that crystals and water. I'm even seeing water with this. And I talked to you about an idea that I have for an invention to be used in the healing arts and light and sound. And those are two elements in there, crystal and water. They're not the only ones, but nonetheless, it should work because they transmit light, they transmit sound, they transmit heat, they react to absence of heat, you know, temperature extremes. And if they're able to take in light and sound, they're able to absorb information. So the only thing would be is that you put it into an enclosure where it doesn't escape. In the normal sense, in other words, it doesn't leak out, I'm saying. Any thought on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that just going back to my reference of using nature as an example, I mean, that's what you're describing is like the confines in the physical geometry of a natural crystal structure. Salt is that way. Quartz is that way. You know, anthracite. I mean, there's all different types of things that attempt to form crystals of different types. And the interesting thing is, a lot of them have energy already in it. Now, just to give you an example, I worked with a guy, won't mention any names, a number of years ago, who discovered that if you take certain metallic salts and you dissolve them in the right electrolyte, you can cause the crystal to grow just by passing a current through this material. Of course, there's a seeding agent that has to be put in there so it starts to coalesce, but nonetheless, once you get the procedure moving, it just continues. And the interesting thing is that the size of the crystal is directly dependent upon the current and voltage that you're applying, you know, to this process.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're all done, you've got this specially grown crystal. And you can let that thing sit on your mantelpiece for the next 100 years if you want to. But the point is that when you are ready to do so, you can reverse the process and take the energy back out. So and I might add, it doesn't have to come out at the same rate that it went in. So for instance, if you take it all out instantaneously, you'll wind up with an explosion. If you take it out, you know, over a longer period of time than you put it in there, you'll wind up with less power, but for a longer time, and vice versa. So one thing that that jives completely with what you're talking about is the fact that there are lots and lots of natural processes which already are responsible for storing energy in crystals. And depending on what the material is, like I use quartz as an example only because I know that a lot of psychics and a lot of mediums are always talking about how receptive the quartz molecule is to the human mind and intent.
Yes.
And so, theoretically, with the right crystal that is very sensitive to your intentions, you could just use your willpower or your projected intent to release energy from it. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that fall into that category. And
yeah.
There are very few people that I'm aware of who actually get into this. There was one guy that I met. I know he's passed away now. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But he spent years working in that area. And, you know, it affected everything, even the production of wines, which, of course, contain a lot of water, perfumes, you know, gems that are used for talismans, all sorts of things. And that whole area, as far as I know, is almost virgin territory.
Yeah.
Of course, you might know more about it than me. But
well, I have some experience in that area, but unfortunately, we're out of time. I just want to say that, you know, this, should we be able to create something like that, I can see them trying to put a carbon tax on it. But they'd have to take it up with God, the creator, I think, by that point. You know, it's amazing. You wouldn't have any crystal disasters, you know. You wouldn't have them catching fire in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. You know, what are you going to do for drama? Especially when you're trying to produce a false flag event so that you can, again, rape the banks and the people, you know, for your own gain. Well, Jim, it's been interesting. I want to thank you for your input. We are out of time tonight, but let's take this topic up again next week and continue onward, if we can do that.
That sounds good to me.
All right.
Happy to do that.
All right. I wish you a pleasant weekend, and I'll see you next Friday in the month of August. And in the meantime, maybe you can really conjure something up, some concept or, you know, an expanded version of tonight's show.
Well, I'll check some of my records that are on ice and see what might be in there that would hinge on the things we talked about. How's that?
Okay, that sounds great. All right, Jim, you have a great night, too. Folks, that wraps it up.
Same to you.
That wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's special guest, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim will be with us next Friday, so be sure to tune in, as well as next Monday when my guest will be none other than Dr. A. True Ott. And I want to also thank Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com, Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.